It's time for three stories you should know, and we're going to stay with the Golden State Warriors for a bit. I'm joined by The Ringer's Katie Baker and by Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Welcome back to both of you.
Hi, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Katie, you're up.
It was only a month ago that Kevin Durant was scoring 50 points to lift the Warriors over the Clippers in six games in the first round of the playoffs and reminding everyone why he was the NBA final MVP in back-to-back seasons. Between then and now, a calf strain that looks suspiciously like an Achilles injury took place, and suddenly the Warriors have not only been winning without Kevin Durant, they have seemed like their old selves again, fearless and fun. Of course, the pendulum has now swung the other way when, following Game 1, in which the Warriors lost to the Toronto Raptors, suddenly everyone is, you know, wondering if they can win without Kevin Durant at all. So once more, the pendulum has swung, and I'm sure it will do so many more times in the coming months.
I think that can an Achilles be considered a calf injury? The Achilles does connect the calf to the heel. And if the New York Jets and New York Giants play in New Jersey, I think in sports it could be considered. I would attribute 10 days off as one of the reasons why you would lose game one. But notwithstanding that, they're such a more joyous team without Kevin Durant. They're just a joy to watch. And of course, the insertion of some drama, could they possibly lose, makes sports not just more enjoyable, but it's the very reason that we watch sports.
Well, I have been enjoying recent headlines. All right, so here are a couple. Kevin Durant and the mirage of basketball heaven. Kevin Durant's inessential greatness. Inessential greatness. I love it. Kevin Durant is the NBA's best player, but the Warriors are way more fun without him. I mean, people seem to be in absolute agreement about this, right? He can be the best out there, and also this team can be more fun to watch without him. But Katie, I'm really with you. I'm thinking that now this narrative is going to change, because up until Thursday night, the idea that Golden State is better with Durant was theoretical. Like, everyone knew it was true. Everyone knew he was the best player, but the team was playing so well, it was really hard to see what they were missing without him. What changes as we move forward?
I agree with what Mike said, is that sometimes, especially with Durant, it almost seems like everyone is just lying in wait, trying to figure out what the next kind of micro controversy is. You know, and you wonder if they actually truly feel their takes, or if they're just going along with the rising and shifting tides of NBA discourse.
Mike, what do you have for us?
Well, the St. Louis Blues are in the Stanley Cup Finals, which has happened before, but they won a game this time, which hasn't. The history of this, and if you've been watching the finals, you'll probably note, because maybe the most famous goal in NHL Finals history was scored against the Blues. It was the series clinching goal in 1970, Bobby Orr flying through the air. Hard to do on skates, I guess, a little bit easier knowing that the goal was in and you don't have to play any more hockey. But what happened was, St. Louis was one of the expansion teams, and the NHL decided to expand and double the league. And what they did was kind of insane in retrospect. They put all the expansion teams in one division. Then they would have the Stanley Cup Finals, and this was in the 1967-68 season. They had the Stanley Cup Finals pit the East against the West. The West were all expansion teams. Let me quote from Sports Illustrated at the time. All four of the East Division contenders are obviously better teams than any of the expansion clubs. Not one West team managed to finish the regular season with a .500 record. And guess what? The Blues made the finals for the first 3 years of their and all these other expansion teams' existence, and they got swept, mightily swept in the finals every time, and the NHL grand poobahs did not want to do a thing about it. Can you imagine if sports talk radio existed back then? What a horrible structure. So finally, I guess the Blues win a game.
First of all, if sports talk radio existed back then, they would all be pointing out that the famous Bobby Orr photo is so famous as a photo because the actual video is extremely underwhelming when you've only seen the photo. He basically scores a little tap in and then flies through the air afterwards. But that said, you know, when you see all the hemming and hawing that takes place today with the way the new divisions are and the wild card, people get upset about that enough. I can only imagine what it would be like. There's always going to be controversy in the National Hockey League.
But this isn't just controversy. It feels like we've gone back and rewritten history, right? Because when I moved to Boston in the 90s, I saw that photo like everywhere. And I had assumed that this must have been like one of those victory snatched from the jaws of defeat moments that, like, the Bruins would not have won that Stanley Cup if not for the amazing goal and Bobby Orr flying through the air. And, like, none of that is true. Like, the Bruins, absolutely, they might have lost that game, but they were absolutely going on to win the series. And I wonder if the other teams that absolutely trounced the Blues during those years have similarly rewritten their histories.
Well, the Montreal Canadiens didn't have to because they just win all the time, or they did back then. There was another Sports Illustrated article which depicted the Canadiens as attending a harness race, having some beers in the afternoon, and that Sunday going out and killing the St. Louis Blues, the best team in the West.
All right. Well, when my husband and I go to baseball games, we go for the sunshine and the beer and, yes, even a little bit of baseball. We do not go to see this.
Oh, look out, people.
Oh, a fan got nailed. And it was a young fan. I'm sick to my stomach right now. Yeah. Albert Almora Jr. is down on one knee and sobbing.
That's from Wednesday night when a 4-year-old girl was struck by a foul ball at an Astros game. At last report, she's expected to be fine. But just last August, a 79-year-old woman died after getting hit in the head at Dodger Stadium. That was after Major League Baseball required teams to extend protective netting to the end of the dugouts. In Japan, protective netting goes from foul pole to foul pole. And if you want to sit in a special section without netting, you pay extra and you're issued a helmet and a glove. This is the thing I can't figure out. Why has Major League Baseball been so resistant to extending the netting? Is baseball really so worried that their game is so very boring that without the excitement of scrambling for foul balls, no one will come to the park?
I do think that teams in general are very nervous about, you know, making the in-game experience be lucrative enough to get fans into the park. And like you said, I've enjoyed sitting in foul ball territory myself and feeling like I could at any moment go crazy and streak the field or something. But you listen to that clip and no one should be describing a player sobbing as a child is carried away in real time. I was looking at the comments on a New York Times piece about what happened, and you do see a lot of people saying, pay more attention, get off your phones, don't sit there, snowflakes, take some responsibility. So I think that societal attitude might be part of it, but it's also, you know, baseball doesn't need to be beholden to that type of fan, and they can rise above it and set their own agenda.
I think that calling out fans for not paying attention is unfair. Mm-hmm. The appeal of baseball rests in the fact that you needn't pay attention for much of the time. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I mean, you're hailing the vendor to get those, and that's right there in the most iconic song associated with the game. Obviously, it's short-sighted financial issue. And also, obviously, this is much of human nature. Stop signs aren't erected usually until a crash or near crash occurs. That said, I do think that in society there was a greater assumption of risk. Things have gotten so much safer, it shouldn't be the case that paying a lot of money for a good seat at the ballpark is a more dangerous thing than, you know, taking your car and riding to the ballpark itself. So the incentive is there to try to do everything not to let this happen again.
Yeah. I've got to admit, I have a bias toward this, which has come from interviewing parents of a small child who was hit in the head from a baseball. And they were watching. They were paying attention. They did everything they could to keep this from happening to their child. And so it's really hard after having one of those conversations to then just say, oh, well, there's some fans who don't like it. Or I totally don't believe the money issue, because the Red Sox put in, you know, they recently extended the netting to the end of the dugout. And the Red Sox used that as an excuse to put in a whole new section of seats. So I really think you can find ways to recoup the costs. It's not about that. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Ringer's Katie Baker and Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Thanks to both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're listening to Only a Game from NPR.